conditioning you probably needed. Today, we finished Doctor's Opinion on Saturday, and we finished Bill's story. I got a lot out of Bill's story this time, and new things are always being revealed. As I mentioned last week, the page we're doing today, I probably done, I don't know how many times, but I didn't listen to what we did last time. I see it differently every time I go through the book, and I think that's why it's such a spiritual book, and it helps me so much. And there's a handout that I gave. Does everybody have the handout? And for those listening on the podcast, these handouts are in the Resources to Recovery, and I'll give the name as we go through it. After Bill's story, it's a story of hope. It's a story of someone who had this disease and what happened to him in 1934-35, and then basically his vision of where we are today. And it came true, how one alcoholic can help another. And from that came today, and we're here, 30 of us, reading this book and studying. The page we're going to read, we're going to do one page today, page 17. I'd read this a lot. In fact, when my sponsor Cliff died, I read this at the service. And I didn't really completely understand it till I listened to the Joe and Charlie tapes. And they make the point that this page is the most important page for newcomers to know, and really for all members to understand, especially in today, because AA has changed quite a bit from it was at the time they wrote this book. Remember when they wrote this book in 1939, there was no AA. They had two or three small groups, and AA took its name from the book. And then I'm going to go through this handout after I read this page. Is that okay? Good. I'm going to do it anyway. We're in a good mood today for those listening to the podcast. It starts chapter 2. It says there is a solution. Now, it doesn't say this is the solution or one of the solutions. There is a solution. Now, this is the only solution offered in this book. This is the only solution that AA offers. And so a lot of times people get, you hear all sorts of things at the meetings, but this is the solution that Alcoholic Anonymous had so they could recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So if you have a hopeless condition of mind and body, they suggest you try this solution, and then you tell us the result. So AA is really, this book is a textbook, and it's a textbook telling you this is what we did, this is the result. If you have what we have, try this and you tell us. And then you know how it works, because you can see people today in the room who have done this and their lives are better. My life is so much better than it was years ago. I can't even explain. My birthday is coming up, and I can't even imagine that when I had that moment of surrender, I'd be sitting here on a Saturday morning reading page 17 with 35 people. Who would have thought? So that's why I think this book is so important, because I do know it works if you do it. So let's see what they say on this page, because it's very powerful. It says, oh, and I made another mistake. I'm always seeking spiritual improvement. I was going to get the original manuscript to see if they wrote, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women," because when the book was written, they only had, what, 50, 75. David, can you pass this out to the other people and get one for Nancy? So we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Now notice they say we're once as hopeless as Bill. We're all hopeless, but we don't have to stay hopeless. But I think I have to know I'm hopeless to become not hopeless. Does that make sense? It's that moment of complete defeat when I realize that there's no hope on my own, that led me to surrender and to recover. Nearly all have recovered. Not all of them, but nearly all have recovered. And actually, their success rate was very high in the beginning of AA because you had to really qualify to even go to the meetings. And these were people who were really desperate and really wanted to go to any length. So if you, so the denominator and the numerator will be close to 100% if we select people who really want this and who are really defeated and are really willing to go to any length and who do it, the success rate is really high. That's why they said rarely have we seen a person fail who has followed our path. And so you can do statistics for anything. Now, the statistics today of people who come to AA, actually come to a meeting, is very, very low. But you're not selecting out those who are completely defeated and those who really want to go to any length. And it says they have solved the drink problem. So you'd be interested to know how they solve the drink problem. Well, actually, what we solve is a living problem. But they're going to get to that later in the book. In the beginning, they're focusing on the first 43 pages, alcohol, the problem of alcohol to the alcoholic, and how you have no power to keep from drinking. Then they're going to go into the relationship with God, and then when they start into action, they tell us the problem isn't alcohol at all, it's me. And it's living a life self-centered, and if I'm self-centered, separated from God, I have no power to live sober. I can't live sober. I can't live sober because I can't deal emotionally with the world sober. It says we are average Americans. Anybody here think you're average? No, this is a special meeting for those listening. There are no average Americans here. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. I mean, look around the room. We would normally have not met and been in a meeting together. We're just from different ages, different sex, different ways of life. We are people who would normally not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, and we feel that today, a friendliness and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. Mm-hmm. Anybody feel that? You come in the room, you see people you know, we joke around. A lot of people give me crap when they come in, that's okay. But we like seeing each other. We know this is a safe place. I always feel good when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it's a safe place for me. And we have a friendliness and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We understand why we're all here, and we're together in that. And it, he uses an example. He says, we are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck. So people who come to AA are people who are on the Titanic and hit the ice. Mm-hmm. Now think about it, and they're in the cold water. Now the problem with the recovery rate is a lot of people have hit the ice and they're drowning in the water and they don't see it. They come here and they don't see it enough to give up. Now as soon as we hit the ice and we're drowning, all we have to do to get out of that situation is give up. And then turn to God and do these steps, and we're saved. Now they don't tell you that here. They're using this as an analogy that we all have a common peril. They use the word rescue from shipwreck when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Now they're using the analogy of the people who saw the Titanic. A lot of people saw it. It's old now. It's about 20 years old, but in the Titanic, which was a famous ocean liner that I think shipwrecked in 1912 in the North Atlantic, they hit an iceberg, and they had the ship arranged so that the people could bring their cattle and dogs or whatever in the bottom. That was the steerage. And then as you got a higher economic level, you worked your way up to the top, and the cab, it was designed so you couldn't go from steerage up. There was no stairways, and so the people at the top didn't have to worry about anybody wandering up there. The way the it was set up, you couldn't do that, and so there was a real separation of people according to their economic situation. And captain's table was the top of the top. You know, if you got to eat with the captain, you were the, you know, whatever. I've been on a lot of cruises. I've eaten with the captain a couple times, probably by mistake. But it's just a way of showing these people felt together, but they were separated when they were in the ship. But when the ship hit the ice, all those barriers went away. And it says, and unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. So a couple other things. When they're in the water, they didn't discriminate who they put in the boats. Now, in the beginning, there's a famous scene where the ladies from the captain's table didn't want to let somebody else into the boat. And somebody said how ridiculous that was, and they let them in. And so, and then when they were on the land, you could see how they were all hugging each other and happy, we survived. And then it says, however, our joy from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. So we stay together as shipwrecked passengers in the boat to salvation, and we're together in it. We don't have to leave here and separate. So this feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement that binds us. Now this is a really critical point, that we have a shared peril, everybody in this room. And we understand what it means. Usually when someone comes in here and says they're an alcoholic, we kind of understand what's happening in a general way to that person. And it's a powerful cement which binds us. Sounds good, doesn't it? But here's the warning, and this is what I think people don't understand today who go to meetings. Now, I understand why we say 90 meetings in 90 days, and I understand that more as I'm sponsoring younger people, how it's so important to have a place to go every day and a place to connect and a fellowship. That's very important. But it says that's only one element in what binds us together. So just going to meetings and being in the fellowship and being an alcoholic and feeling the joy and camaraderie and friendliness is great. But it says here, that won't keep you together. That's not the solution. It's very clear. So there is a power in the fellowship. It's very strong. And the power is to bring you to this. The tremendous fact for every one of us, and it's a fact, is that we have discovered a common solution. It's the common solution that holds it together. And in the beginning, they did the steps before they came to the meeting. And now we have people come in, and they don't know anything about the big book or the program, and they come to AA. There's nothing wrong with that. But we're supposed to take them, and we're supposed to show that person the solution. And so we have a common solution. And it says we have a way out on which they all agreed. So nobody disagreed with this way out. It was accepted by everybody, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. So here's the deal. You're shipwrecked. You have a peril. You're dying. You're drowning. You come in here, and we save you for a while. And we're all hugging each other and singing, what's that song, Kumbaya, yeah, whatever. Yeah. But that won't get me the solution. That just gives me the power of the common peril and the fellowship. What gets me the solution is the way out on which is they absolutely agree, which is presented in this book. And they call it brotherly and harmonious action. So they had this vision that we would all be doing this solution together, and that's what the meetings were supposed to be. And they had a vision of the fellowship of the Spirit. And it says that at the end on page 164, you'll join us in the fellowship of the Spirit, the fellowship of people with a common peril who are doing a common solution to connect to the Spirit together. And it says, this is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. It is great news. Now, the Bible is called good news. So they didn't say, this is the good news. They call it the great news. Now, I've been studying the Bible quite a bit the last few months, and I can see how the good news and the great news are really intertwined. And I've been studying the book of James just the last week, and, you know, verse after verse is basically the whole AA program. And so this is great news. So if you come here and you think your life is falling apart and unmanageable and things are really bad, we have great news for you. We have a solution. And that's supposed to be what's happening at the fellowship. Does anybody not have a handout? Now, I have this handout, which I got from, I think I got this, I don't know where I got this years ago, but there's several things in here, and I thought we'd go over them. If we go back to this one, it says, what is the solution? Now, a smart person would have put this on the top when we copied them, but I need work. I need work. And so, and for those listening on the podcast, it's in Resources to Recovery, and it says, what is the solution? Now, this is really powerful stuff. I believe I got this from Joe and Charlie. So what is the solution? Now, here on the left-hand side, and I'll describe it for those listening, it says, the fellowship supports us. And underneath that, they have a new member in a circle. And they have these old members around him in the circle. And it's a fellowship of those who suffer the same problem. These people have all hit the iceberg. And so everybody who comes here has a common peril. And then it says, the old member supports the new member through experience and hope. That's what we're supposed to give. You come in here, we're going to tell you our experience is, okay, we've been where you are. We have a solution, and we have hope. And then the new member starts to believe and become willing and investigates. That means he's willing to believe there is a solution. He's willing to change, and he's going to investigate what the old member did to become, to have the solution. Now, old member is not an old timer. It doesn't matter how many years you have. They didn't put old member 35 years. Old member means you've done the deal and you're doing the deal every day. So you can carry this message to the new person. We talked about that working with others. You know, and so he believes, he's willing, and he investigates. And then on the other side, it says spiritual experience or spiritual awakening changes us. Anybody believe that? It's true. That's the whole point. We want to change our personality. And we want to have God do that. And we want to change from the self-centered person I was to a God-centered person. And it says, and we're going to read it in the chapter, it says, we pick up a simple kit of spiritual tools, which is this book and the 12 steps. The book won't get you sober. But doing what's in the book will. The book is just a map, the first 102 pages, but I call it a treasure map. And if you follow the map, you'll get the treasure. Now, if you follow this map, you'll get this treasure. But if you take this map and you change it a little bit, and you make a few changes, you're not going to find the treasure that they had. And so that's why they say if you do what we did and you follow what we did, and you do this, you'll get the result. But if you follow it a little bit, like if you follow a map a little bit, and you make a few changes, you're not going to get to the destination. And it's a simple kit of spiritual tools. And underneath it, it's this box with a handle, like a suitcase. It has a simple kit of spiritual tools. And you open it up, and there are 12 steps in there. And then it says, revolutionize my whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. That's from page 25, and there is a solution. Anybody thinks that's going to be good for them? It is. It's the deal. And then it says, personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. And remember, there's a chapter at the end of this book on spiritual experience and spiritual awakening, and they describe it as a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. What it means is your personality when you come in here is not sufficient to recover from alcoholism. You've got to change it. And you've got to change it to a God-centered personality, not a self-centered personality. So then you can go from here and then you become a new old member because you've done the steps. And then you go into the old member on the other side and you find a new member. We have a lot of new people come in here I don't know, but I always try to go up to them and ask them if they've done the steps, if they know any of this, do they need help, etc. I think that's what we need to do. We need to find new people and help them, and then they, all I ask them is that they work with somebody else when they've done it. That's the whole deal, or we wouldn't be here today. So I think this is really a powerful, simple example of what they're saying on page 17. Just going to meetings, you'll just stay a new member. And unless you take the action and pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools, then you're not going to have the personality change. So that's what Joe and Charlie had a vision. I agree with it. And I see it a lot today. So we can change it one person at a time, try to help people understand when they come here with the common peril that we have great news, we have a way out. And that's one of the reasons why I started the site Experience the Big Book, because I felt like if people knew what was in the book, I could read it with them, they might be able to do it and find somebody and work the steps with. So somebody got the idea, well, why don't we just record these and then they can at least hear me going through the book, and I hope it's helped somebody. Now, if we look here at the first page on this handout, it says, and this is a good time to do this because we're starting into the areas of solution. It says road chart to decision. I think that's how it's labeled on the resources. And it has a circle, and it says problem, lack of power. And above it, it has mental obsession and physical allergy. Anybody have the physical allergy in here? Yeah. It would be great to see us all if we brought a case of beer in here. And then, or a keg, and we started drinking and locked the door. Oh boy, that would be a view. There you go. Well, maybe we'll do that tomorrow for Super Bowl. And then the mental obsession. The mental obsession is what kills us, because we don't drink unless our mind tells us it's okay. And how do I treat the mental obsession? I can't, because I have no power. You see, lack of power. Then the next circle says solution, power. It's not that complicated a program. I don't have any power. Lack of power, that's my dilemma. I have to find a power to live, a power to relieve my mental obsession. It cannot be me. And it says fellowship supports spiritual experience changes. That's what we just saw. The old timer, old member, and the new member. So we support somebody to make the spiritual experience changes, and then they have power. And they call that step two. You make a decision that you're going to have a power greater, that you're willing to believe a power greater than yourself can help you, right? And step one is where you admit you have lack of power to manage your life, to keep from drinking. And then the decision in step three is the turning point. We read about that at every meeting. We stood at the turning point. Anybody ever listen to how it works? We read it all the time. It says we stood at the turning point, right? And we had to abandon ourselves to God, right? And we make a decision. And it says, I'm going to either accept spiritual help and believe, which is sanity and sobriety, or I'm going to disbelieve, continue drinking, insanity, or death. Now, there's several places in the big book where they actually say we're going to go on to live a spirit, we're going to have an alcoholic of death, or we're going to take a spiritual way of life. And it says these are not easy alternatives for an alcoholic to face. Now, I read that. I said, well, what are they talking about? If you have a choice between dying or accepting spiritual health, it's not that easy a choice. But I think what they're really saying is it's not easy choices for an alcoholic to face. Most alcoholics can't see that they're really at the turning point, that there's only one, they have to turn one way or the other. And they're either going to go on and die or they're going to get spiritual help. They can't see that that's their situation. They think they're close, but they think they know how to handle it. We read yesterday at a meeting on Bill's story. He's dying, and he says, I still thought I could control the situation. And I think it's a gift when I could see that there was a turning point. And I had to turn away from myself and what I was doing and thinking to another way. And that's when I asked God for help, and I'm here today. So I think this is really a really good handout. Now, here's another one. Everybody turn your pages at the same time. Well, I have the new microphone, so hopefully it'll drown out that. When we have these handouts, sometimes we make a lot of noise for those listening. It says disease concept of alcoholism. We say it's a disease, right? Mm-hmm. You heard that. It says physical. One does not drink safely or he is at dis-ease with the spirit. So they say can't drink allergy, and they have this thing where they show you the enzymes and they build up and the acetone creates a craving. Who knows why, but we have it. And there's no medicine I know of that's going to fix this. No medicine I know that's going to change the way alcoholics handle alcohol so that they can control how much they drink. And in fact, if they had a pill that did that and we took it, we'd take two. Because we wouldn't like the effect, right? We want to drink right through the effect, right? And so alcoholics would abuse these pills. And it says, I thought that was funny. Anyway, and it says, well-known spree. One drink sets off craving from acetone level, two drinks, three drinks, four drinks, etc. Anybody ever have a spree when they drank? In fact, anybody not? Anybody not want to? You see, that's the problem. I bet every alcoholic in this room, if I said, okay, what do you think about having a drink? Now look at your mind. You're immediately thinking of one more than that. Right? Are you going to have enough? How much is enough? And then it says, 9 drinks safely, they are at ease. So 9 out of 10 people aren't alcoholics, but 1 out of 10 is. And then the ones who can drink safely, they handle it normally and they start to feel it, right? And they wave over the glass and they do all that alcohol abuse. And they they stop. They leave alcohol behind. Mm-hmm. Really, really something. There should be a treatement for that, but exactly. And it says you go from the well-known spree, and then they have these arrows, and it says emerges restless, irritable, and discontented, filled with guilt, remorse, resentment, self-pity, and fear. Anybody remember that? So you go in the spree, and you emerge restless, irritable, discontented. You're filled with guilt, remorse, resentment, self-pity, and fear. And then they have this emotional barometer. And it says emotional barometer, and they show a level of emotional unrest that doesn't lead to drinking, that willpower can control. You see how clever this is? And so you get up to this level and you control it. And some of them start to get a little bit higher till it says necessary to drink. So your emotions build up. Remember, it's a disease of emotions. And when our emotions reach a certain level, willpower won't work. And then we drink, and then we go back to the allergy. So alcoholics can handle a certain amount of stress, each person. That's why when people come in, they've always given the grace of God, I believe. There's a time period. But then they're sober without program, and they live a certain amount of time, and then it builds up, and then we don't see them anymore. Nothing good usually happens to people who aren't doing the steps, who come here and just live sober. It's very hard. Now, occasionally people can stay sober for years not doing the steps, but they may not be happy. I can't speak for that. So this is a really good illustration of why we have to do it, because sober, we can't live with our emotions, and we have to drink at some point. Now, we don't say, I have to drink. Our mind says, I need a drink. And then we think about all it's going to do for us. And then before you know it, we're drinking, and we said, how'd that happen? Now, here's a thing on big book goals. This is really a good review of what we're trying to do here, and we're getting ready to look at the solution and the chapters. It says, goal one is the problem. The problem is doctor's opinion in chapter one, Bill's story, and there is still a lot of the problem, and there is a solution, and more about alcoholism. And there's steps one and two in those chapters. But basically, they're trying to tell you the problem in Bill's story and doctor's opinion. And step one is powerless. Anybody not believe that? Everybody's nodding, right? But yet there are probably people in this room who are nodding their heads who aren't going to work the steps, and we won't see them in a while. I hope I'm not one of them. I probably was years ago when I first came in. And so we see it intellectually, but do we understand it deep inside of our soul? Then goal two is the solution. It's lucky. Remember when Bill W. left the hospital in 1934 when the doctor said they're going to have to lock him up, he'll go insane or die. There was no solution. There was no AA. And then remember, Ebby came to him, and God brought the solution of the Oxford Group, which is the spiritual change in the steps. And then we're here today. So step two is power, and they talk about that in There's a Solution. We're going to read that. More about alcoholism tells me that there is no solution without God, that I have no defense against the first drink without a higher power. Anybody believe that? Well, it's true today. It's true for me today. People say, well, you've been sober a long time. No, I have no power today without God. And I still remember that line the first time I heard it. I said, wow. It says the only choice I make today is seek the power that gives me choice. And that's what steps 10, 11, and 12 are all about. And we agnostics, it tells us where the power is. Then goal three is the action necessary for recovery. So knowing the problem, knowing the solution won't do me any good. It just makes me a smart drunk. You know, I know what the problem is, and I know the solution. I mean, there are people quoting how it works in the bar somewhere. I mean, it's sad. It's funny, but it's true. Knowing this won't do anything. I have to do it. And it says action necessary to recover, and that's in chapter 5, 6, and 7. And how to find the power, steps 3 through 12. How to find this power. So I think this is really good, especially for new people. Let's see. So we did the solution. We did the big book goals. We did the road chart, the decision. Oh, and here's one that's real subtle. It has a chart, self-will, at the top. Anybody got that in the handout? This is in the resources, too. I don't know what it's labeled. I think it's self-will versus God's will. Self-will. And it has a circle. And at the center is God, but it's blacked out. And it's blacked out by the circle. It's blocked. Remember, we're going to unblock the things in step four. And what's blocking God in my life when I'm on self-will is fear, guilt, and remorse, and resentment. And then there's the social instinct, security instinct, and sex instinct. And remember, when we're trying to fulfill what I think I need for security materially or emotionally or physically through the sex relationships, I'm in self when I do that. And then it says I have conflict. And I have conflict in these areas of my life: family, wife, fellow workers, material things, economy, money, home, car. So anytime I'm running the world and I decide what I need in those areas, I'm going to be in conflict. How's that working for you? Then it has underneath God's will. Now this is a little better circle. This circle has God and it's not blacked out. And it has security. And it has social sex instincts. And you notice self is much smaller letters. And it's on the side. It's not governing these. And then it says we're in harmony with the home, car, retirement, other, spouse, children, man's love, God's love. We're in harmony with the world. Now, which circle is better? Well, obviously, the one with God's will. So how do I go from the top circle to the bottom circle? I have to work the steps, and I have to work them continuously. Step 10 is where I recognize whenever I'm in the top circle, and I have certain spiritual exercises I do to get out of that, right? And to get back to God. And it's all day long. I can be self-circle at 9 o'clock and God's circle at 10. And 11 is how I meditate and the directions on how I go from one to the other. And at night, we review how we did during the day. So this is what the whole program is about. And it's not, you don't, I'm sorry to tell you this, you don't do the steps and you get in this circle. and then you're singing the rest of your life. It's a constant thing. I have to align my will, my attitudes, and my thoughts to the action, and my actions to the harmony with the will of God. And that's in the book of James. I just listened to this guy today, and that's the whole AA program. Now remember, they read the book of James when they started, the first few members, and they were going to call themselves the James Club. But they thought that might not be a good idea. Probably not. But what we have in our program didn't come from two or three people sitting around. It's spiritual principles that have been around forever. But I believe that God gave them to these few people to write them down, because it shows me a way to live so I can carry out the spiritual principles in the Bible. And so we'll open it up with that. And I hope you guys found this helpful.